hardwood, cottonwood in a broader term, but what we're really talking about today is poplar. That limit what my clients can currently do. They are looking to potentially grow some larger trees for a longer period of time. To do that, they make some adjustments. Folks have raised reasonable concerns about resource protection and other issues, and I think this bill gives us a forum to come together to present something to the Board of Forestry that we can all live with and move the agenda forward. With that, I'll offer up any questions.
Why don't we just go ahead and go through all three of you first. Mr. Cafferata, do you want to go next?
Chair Vaki and members of the committee, my name is Mike Cafferata. I'm the policy and manager at the Oregon Department of Forestry. And I just, in very brief form, we've reviewed this House Bill 3628, and we appreciate the work of the Legislative Council to draft it. We believe it actually reflects the agreements among the parties that have come together on this, and we support the bill as it is now.
Very good. Mr. Wilkerson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ray Wilkerson, Oregon Forest Industries Council. As Mr. Peden indicated, we've been working with his client for some time now on this issue. There was a bill in the 2007 session that asked the legislature to make the call about to what extent the Forest Practices Act should apply to these operations. That bill was not did not pass, and in the ensuing time, OFIC, along with the Smallwoods Association of Farm Bureau, have been working with Greenwood Resources to see what could be done about the issue at hand, and we are all comfortable, OFIC is comfortable with basically delegating this decision to the Board of Forestry, which has the expertise to determine whether or not these operations ought to be treated differently under the law than standard timber operations. So we are supporting of the bill.
Good. Committee, anything? Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I haven't had a chance to really get into this topic very, very deeply, but I have a couple of questions for the Board of Forestry, if I could.
No, go ahead.
We've just gone through some disastrous mudslides that was not the result of hardwood or cottonwood. I understand that. A couple of those occurred in land that was under supervision of Oregon State University, and we felt they were kind of the leading edge as far as proper methods of growing and harvesting timber in the state. Yet we had some terrible slides because of that during the conditions, which were unusual, with more rainfall than expected, but that may be the norm for all I know it's coming up. And so we're a little bit shaken about the Forestry Board's ability to, on a scientific basis, make decisions now. Obviously, there were some mistakes made there. I'm not saying they're yours, but there were mistakes made. So my first question is, is there any chance that these kind of changes would lead to that kind of a situation again on the kind of lands we're talking about now for cottonwoods?
Chair Vaki and Senator Bates.
I should probably not say chance. Is there a reasonable certainty that would not happen? There's always a chance. I mean, you can't predict everything.
Yeah, Senator Bates, I'm not sure how to answer your question. These are the places where these cottonwoods are growing are not subject to landslides. They're not part of the underlying geologic formations that have landslides as a natural occurring process. So, you know, to the extent that you're considering landslides in these cottonwoods, I think that's probably two different situations. Does that get at your question?
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go right ahead.
I'm thinking more of environmental damage, runoff into streams, small slides into culverts, things of that nature. I realize this is, I mean, I know where these are growing at, and I got 8 acres myself, and I was thinking about putting cottonwoods in those, so I'm not necessarily opposed to this.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure we're covering ourselves environmentally on this vote. So these are agricultural lands, flat lands for the most part. Does the Forestry Board have any concerns about environmental damage from this?
I would say that what this bill does is it allows the Board of Forestry to make rules around hybrid poplar between 12 and 20 years of age. And we do have environmental concerns, and that is the proper place to talk about those is in front of the Board of Forestry to make some adjustments. There are some reasons to think about doing that the hybrid poplar has grown in a way that doesn't make some of these things very conducive. And one of the rules we're asking here to waive is the scenic highway statute. Another one is the clear cut size limitation. And so there are some environmental things around that. And if the cottonwood industry can show ways to meet those needs while not complying with that rule, there might be some reasons to do that. Now, if they can't find ways to meet the environmental concerns, I would expect the board wouldn't make the adjustments to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Peden, would you jump in and add to that answer, please?
You bet. Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, a couple of different things about this. One is, I think it's a very reasonable question. It's exactly, I think, the issues and concerns that OFIC and others have raised, I think, in terms of protecting the integrity of the Oregon Forest Practices Act that covers a lot of that. And we're going to, assuming this bill passes, we're going to have that conversation with those folks as well as the staff and the Board of Forestry. Mike is right, and certainly you sound very knowledgeable about the type of land that's grown here. I think the reasonable, and I'll use the eastern Oregon land for example, streamside degradation, very unlikely. The thing is irrigated, the land is irrigated using a sophisticated irrigation system just like you would, say, corn. They aren't streamside lands. Are there other types of resource out there on that property, whether it's wildlife or others? There are, and those are things we need to take a look at to do protections. But I think given the opposite or the concerns that OFIC and others have raised, our desire to craft something that makes sense and people live with, and I think the diligence of the board, I feel confident we're going to come to a good solution that works for everyone.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get on the record that I do have environmental concerns, and if the board can deal with those, that's fine. Well, let's make sure that happens.
And certainly this is a terrific natural resource bill for the natural resource part of this committee, and the chair would be equally concerned if there was an adverse environmental impact that were to come up, and would welcome the bill back in this committee if that were the case. But I know that there hasn't been an indication of that thus far. Anything else? Okay, Katie Fast. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you. Is it all right?
Christina McNitt.
Thank you. For the record, sure. Katie Fast, Oregon Farm Bureau. Oregon Farm Bureau appreciated the opportunity to negotiate with the poplar raisers during the interim and bring back a bill that we feel meets and protects the integrity of the Forest Practices Act and allows these discussions to do with environmental protections and also forestry harvest to the Board of Forestry, who are the specialists in that field, and where these policy discussions around forestry should be taken, because they are the public members serving for forestry. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. You have several bills. I'd like to keep it brief.
Thank you. Ms. McNitt, you have anything to add?
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Christina McNitt with Oregon Small Woodlands Association. I wasn't going to say anything, but just in light of the questions that were raised, Senator Bates, that's exactly why we couldn't come to any agreement last session. When the bill originally proposed a wholesale exemption from all Forest Practices Act regulations for these types of stands up to 20 years. And our group was concerned that we couldn't necessarily guarantee the integrity of the Forest Practices Act, which I'll remind everyone and our members certainly reminded daily, is not about facilitating growing trees necessarily, but it's about protecting public resource values. So it's very important to us about the wildlife, wetlands, riparian areas, landslides. There's a litany of items encompassed in this, and we felt this was a reasonable compromise to get these discussions in front of the Board of Forestry on a case-by-case management basis.
Anything else, committee? Okay, thank you both very much. Anybody else here to testify on House Bill 3628?
Good question.
And seeing not, close the public hearing, open up a work session on 3628, if I could have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move 3628 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Girard, who moves 3628 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none. The motion passes, and Senator Nelson, would you carry that on the floor for us?
Yes.
Thank you. With that, I'll close the work session on 3628. Open. Is Margie Hoffman here? Are you in the room? There you are. Let's do your bill next, since the one in between is going to take a little bit longer, we'll get you in and out. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 3611A.
Chair Ivaki and members of the committee, thank you very much for taking the time to hear this bill this session. Through your committee, we worked on Senate Bill 704. Oh, I'm sorry.
Margie, why don't you identify yourself and then give us a very quick summary on what the bill pertains to.
My name is Margie Hoffman, and I represent the Oregon Dental Association. Senate Bill 704 was a bill that was passed in the 2007 session that requires dental offices to install amalgam separators by January 1, 2011. Section 4 of that bill would allow dental offices to delay installing amalgam separators if they are following the best management practices document put together by the Oregon Dental Association. However, it only applied to dentists living or operating in areas where special districts were managing the wastewater system. So it was necessary for us to come back to the legislature this session and make sure that all dentists operating in the state of Oregon are able to apply to the wastewater management entity for certification of following best management practices.
Good.
That's basically it. Any questions?
Questions, committee? No? All right, Ms. Hoffman, thank you. Mr. Mason, did you have anything to add to that?
Chair Ivaki and the members of the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee, Michael Mason from Portland, well, not originally, but representing the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs. We support the bill, which is modest and actually needed amendments to Senate Bill 704, and appreciate your due pass recommendation. And I'd be happy to answer questions, but thank you for your consideration.
Seeing none, thank you.
All the amendments were done on the House side, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3611A and open up a work session on 3611A. If I could have a motion, please.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3611 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Girard moving 3611A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Girard, you'll carry that one. Close the work session on 3611A. Open up a public hearing on 3629A. Sue, if you could. And Ron Eber, Art Schleck, and Dan Eisenbeiss, if you could make your way up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3629A authorizes counties to approve a property line adjustment when one or both of the abutting properties are smaller than the applicable minimum tract size, and after adjustment, one tract meets minimum tract size, or when both abutting properties are smaller than the minimum tract size before the adjustment and remain smaller than the minimum tract size after the adjustment. The bill includes provisions for land zoned for exclusive farm use, forest use, or mixed farm and forest use, defines partition plat, clarifies the statutory definition of property line adjustment, applies provisions of the bill to property line adjustments approved before, on, or after the effective date of the bill. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
Okay. Mr. Slack, you want to begin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties and pleased to be here this afternoon in support of House Bill 3629A. I know it's hard to believe, but in land use and in practicing it as most counties have for 30 years, and you begin to practice it and you do things that you think you're doing correctly, and you've done it for 30 years that way, and then all of a sudden a question is asked and a court decides that what you've been doing is not right by a strict interpretation of the statutes. And what we're here today is to try and address a court case, Phillips versus Polk County, in which LUBA and then subsequently the Court of Appeals made a determination that lot line adjustments, where you have two parcels and you're moving a common property line one way or the other, is that needs to go through a public hearing and is subject to a partitioning rather than an administrative procedure, which it has been done for years. House Bill 3629 will bring us back to where counties have been approving adjustments in property lines as a result of where we've had surveys that show that a building is on the neighbor's property rather than on your property. Mm-hmm. A lot of these parcels were created historically without surveys and other kinds of things. The other thing that we find is in the farming community and in the forest community that people are interested in buying other pieces of property, and rather than acquire the part of the neighbor's property, rather than creating separate parcels, they just do a simple lot line adjustment. So this is, you know, really helps out the continued farming and forest industries within the state of Oregon at this point. This is a good bill. We've brought it to you. The bill tried to go through the 07 session, didn't make it for several different reasons. But the proponents of the bill, the counties, have taken a deep breath. I'll say the environmental community has taken a deep breath, and we've brought you a compromise, which I believe it brings us to 90% of what we all wanted to start with. This is a good bill, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and I urge that you you support it. And I'll answer any questions at the appropriate time.
Mr. Eber.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ron Eber for the Oregon Department of Land Conservation and Development. We are also in full support of the House Bill 3629A and concur with Mr. Schlack's comments. I think the important thing to recognize is that when you've got, as he refers to those old surveys, and we have those old deeds and those plat maps, they're on a piece of paper that's one-dimensional. And we try and get that out on the face of the earth that's three-dimensional. Fences get in the wrong place, rivers move, houses get on the wrong side of the line. For the system, for the land use system to work, it needs some flexibility to address those very real issues. And this bill takes us back to the flexibility that was there, that maintains the existing law for cities, gives the counties the ability to deal with these situations, and remove some potential areas of abuse that may have been going on where land was used on one parcel to qualify for a dwelling and then it was shifted for another one and used a second time. And but overall, this is a good bill and we're in full support of it.
Good. Mr. Eisenbeis.
Chair Avakian, members of the committee, for the record, Dan Eisenbeis with 1000 Friends of Oregon. In short, we believe that this is a reasonable compromise, and you should pass this bill. I just want to note that in the Phillips versus Polk County case, there was a clear manipulation of the property line adjustment process to get around minimum lot sizes that help protect our farm and forest zones. The Court of Appeals upheld the LUBA decision, and appropriately so. It's not clear to 1000 Friends of Oregon that legislation is necessary to address that case, but we believe that this legislation will uphold the safeguards that we need regarding farm and forest land. Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. And this is probably maybe not directly raised, but I remember talking with Ron 6 or 7 years ago about the use of partitions to circumvent the land use law. And this really doesn't have anything to do with it, but as from what Dan just said, there was some of that involved in it. Is this partitioning issue still a big issue from your viewpoint?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, I think we were talking about the issue of the partitioning laws in the land use arena and judges' authority to create parcels and whether those were exempt from land use authority. So that was really a different issue, and that's still sort of hanging out there. But this is really just dealing with lot line adjustments, and is a good thing.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Bates?
Just to make sure I'm really clear on this, because I think I've got the picture, but if you bear with me, and this is a question for all three of you, let's see if you concur with what I'm going to say. In Southern Oregon, we have a lot of situations where people have bought land on the county and of various sides, often 10, 20, 30, 40 acres. And the original surveying was done at the turn of the century or before the turn of the century. And to go back and find where those lot lines really exactly were is very difficult sometimes. I've had the experience, kind of the fun sometimes, of trying to find a brass plug in the ground that's been driven in for 2 or 3 feet and trying to find that and redo things. Our techniques for now with GPS and the other things we have is much more accurate. And it's surprising how often people have found that a corner of their house was on somebody else's property. A barn was there, the fence had been put 10, 15 yards in the wrong place, road driven in the wrong spot, and has led to some really tough times for people where they found the road to their house, as an example, was on the next guy's property and led to all kinds of neighborly discussions. If that's the purpose of straightening this thing out, because we often do those kind of changes at the county level, and usually there's exchange of money between parties if necessary. That's one thing. But if they're doing something here that would let people sort of, and this is something we'd never do, gerrymander a piece of property, we wouldn't do that in our delegations here. But if you're talking about gerrymandering property in order to qualify property for dwellings, that's a different thing. I assume that does not do that. What we're looking at here is changing lot lines to deal with the reality of what's happened over the last 30, 40, 50 years in an area where often it's very hard to tell where those lines really should be. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, that is correct. And I would just point to Section 2 of the bill. Where in the past we're aware that a couple of people have been creative, this would eliminate that ability to be creative in doing something like that. And it's specifically spoken to.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Walter Gowell and Bill Kluse. Sorry, Bill. Bill Kluse.
Thank you, Chair Avakian and members of the committee. My name for the record is Walter R. Gowell. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar, the Real Estate and Land Use Section, which is comprised of hundreds of real estate and land use attorneys who often disagree, being on often opposite sides of the same development proposal. We are here, and the Legislative Committee unanimously passed its motion to express its endorsement and its desire to see this bill pass. It has the beneficial effect of reversing the broader scope of the Phillips decision that most practitioners, both real estate and land use, believe was unintended. The court, in its decision in the Phillips case, focused on the statute that was involved, as the intent of that statute was to create minimum parcel sizes for creation of dwellings. And that the case did accomplish that and does accomplish that, and this bill does not change that outcome of that case. What it does do is it reduces the scope of that decision to that circumstance and leaves the other beneficial uses of lot line adjustments. In my written testimony, I've pointed out about 7 areas where they are commonly used by practitioners. It allows those to continue used unabated as has been the case for the last 30 years. I don't believe that the statute has ever been interpreted by the real estate practitioner and land use practitioner community, or certainly by the counties, in the way that the court did this past year. However, this bill allows that interpretation to protect the minimum lot size guarantees on rural dwellings to be protected, while at the same time allowing lot line adjustments to solve the myriad of problems that have been used to solve in the past. And when somebody comes into your office, as has happened to me probably 10 times, and says, my portion of my house is on my neighbor's property, what do I do? You know, it's nice to have a solution for them that doesn't involve litigation and does not involve a major problem. And so this legislation restores the status quo on that issue, and the Oregon Bar is in favor of it. I'd be happy to take your questions.
Very good. Why don't we go to Mr. Close first?
Thank you very much, Chair Bakken, members of the committee. My name is Bill Close. I practice land use law in Eugene, Oregon. I guess Walt really has testified for my whole segment of the bar. I have not coordinated my testimony with Walt, and he said in his written comments he's explained in detail who this bill will serve and how it will work, and I've kind of done that in my testimony too, and I'm sure we match 100%. In the letter I've distributed to you today, on the back I have some little graphic examples of how this bill would work in real life on the ground. And these are the typical situations that people find themselves when they want to do property line adjustments. And for each example, I've got three columns there. The rule before the Phillips decision, Art Schlack was describing that as the way the rules of the road for the past three decades. The middle column is the rules after the Phillips decision for the last year or so, frustrating for everybody. And then the third column is the rules, that is, whether you could do that, whether or not you could do that property line adjustment under this bill. I think I've got them right. Ron Eber looked at it and said, Bill, I think you got it right. The big picture here is that this corrects the overbroad decision of Luba and the Court of Appeals in the Phillips case. It's interesting. At Luba focused on Chapter 92 and the definition of partition and said, well, you can't be doing these property line adjustments without going through the partition process. I wasn't involved in that. I did get involved at the Court of Appeals level. And the Court of Appeals essentially affirmed Luba, but on a completely different theory. The Court of Appeals went to Chapter 215 and minimum lot sizes. The results was kind of the same. People were out of the property line adjustment business, and this bill restores the rules substantially as they were before. As the folks that testified earlier mentioned, this bill does articulate a couple of nuances that snuff out what some folks call abuses in the property line adjustment business. And those are very reasonable changes. The things that this bill prohibits, I never thought you could do anyway.
Well, my guess is we're going to stand at ease. Well, we can move the bill pretty quick. Or I can...
Oh, this false alarm.
Talk fast.
Good. I think that pretty much brings my testimony. I followed the predecessor of this bill last session, put a lot of energy into it, and sorry it didn't pass, but it started late. I think the momentum's built, and this does essentially the same thing. Support the bill 100%. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both. Questions? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. Sandra Bishop, Sean Gillians. These are the last two. Is there anybody else who wants to testify on this bill that's here? Okay. You two are batting cleanup then.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Vaki and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sandra Bishop. I'm here this afternoon representing Lane County. Kent Howell, our Lane County Planning Director, was unable to be here today, but he wanted me to make sure that Lane County went on record as supporting this bill. We want to be clear that the bill does not specify exact procedures that counties must use, but retains flexibilities as different counties do the property line adjustments and the verification of the legal lots in different ways. Some counties verify specific applications for PLAs or property line adjustments and deny and approve, and then the landowner can appeal. In Lane County's case, Lane County does a legal lot verification at the time a landowner requests development. So it's a little bit different than some other counties. There have been a lot of examples about going around geographic features, or, you know, an example of someone's orchard and they find out one row of trees is on the adjoining property. So we really appreciate you supporting this as a common sense approach to the property line adjustment. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sean Gillians representing the Oregon Association of Realtors. I think you've heard some great testimony here today of the important function of this bill. We're certainly in support of it. And I think it really demonstrates the positive collaborative effort that we had of all the interest groups coming together. We came to a consensus with a bill that had some important safeguards in it, and I think everyone's comfortable with that and urge your support. Okay.
Questions? Seeing none, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
So I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3629A, open up a work session on 3629A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3629 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Girard moves 3629A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussions? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Senator Bates, you were complimented more than once by people testifying on your thorough knowledge of the bill. So
just because I've lived through these things, that happens three times.
I'm sure you'll be pleased to carry it for us.
I'll be very happy to, because although I may have a conflict coming up.
That's all right. You can declare it. Close the work session on 3629A, and with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.